Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, babies are born with a sense of right and wrong, but adult morality is different. We'll talk to Yale psychology professor Paul Bloom about inherent notions of justice versus the ones we learn. Also, Ken Burns today with his documentary about the Gettysburg Address as it turns 150 years old next week. This will include Burns's call for all Americans to memorize and recite the speech, and three Brian Lehrer Show listeners will do just that. And did 60 Minutes blow it on Benghazi because of conservative bias? That's upcoming. But first, the transition from Mayor Bloomberg to Mayor Bill de Blasio begins today in earnest. At the Veterans Day parade yesterday, de Blasio told reporters that the transition will begin in earnest today, his words, and he'll soon announce a timeline for the major appointments like police commissioner and schools chancellor and his top deputy mayor. Any idea? As we welcome, by the way, Andrea Bernstein, WNYC Metro editor, and Dana Rubenstein, political reporter for Capital New York. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Any idea, Andrea, what that timeline will be or if those top people have been selected yet but not announced?
I don't think they've been selected yet. I do know that Mayor Bloomberg announced Ray Kelly as his police commissioner the Monday after he was elected mayor,
which would have been yesterday.
So I imagine that they'll be moving very quickly on that. I mean, there was a pretty rapid fire selection of commissioners under when Bloomberg had just been elected, which started essentially now and went for the next month. And there were sort of the big ones all happened pretty quickly. And I'm imagining with Bill de Blasio that we're going to see the sort of three top ones: police, education, and housing, along with economic development, fairly soon. And we'll see some of the other ones, like maybe sanitation, a little later on. Although sanitation, exceedingly important for Mayor de Blasio, because we all know how devastating a snowstorm can be and how quickly one can come on in January. So historically, I mean, Mayor Giuliani, for example, kept David Dinkins sanitation commissioner for precisely that reason. Those operations people you really sort of don't want to mess with, particularly in the winter in New York.
Which shows how sometimes what's really important to the success of an administration might not be what New Yorkers are sitting on their edge of
I'm not sure even who can name the current sanitation commissioners.
There you go. Dana, any other scuttlebutt along the names line?
Well, he has said that he would prioritize the appointments of the Deputy Mayor for Operations, I think, and the police commissioner, that those would be the ones that would be forthcoming first. And then I guess the only other news transition-wise is just that there does appear to have been some lobbying at the SOMOS conference in Puerto Rico this past week for the police commissioner.
De Blasio was with many people around him, and I know the Post reported he met with First Deputy Police Commissioner Rafael Pinero, who's applying for the top job. He would also be the first Latino commissioner of the NYPD where he'd be appointed. Is he considered a front runner? Is this a name that the two of you know?
Well, it's a name that's been out there, as well as the name of Philip Banks, who is the top uniformed officer, and Bill Bratton, who is, of course, the former police commissioner.
Pinero, by the way, 64. Born in Spain, raised in Cuba, according to the Times today. They're talking about, the two of you are talking about two of the most top aides to Ray Kelly.
Right.
Plus Bill Bratton, who kind of started the Dinkins then Giuliani era of, you know, tougher policing, if you want to call it that. Broken windows strategies and the whole thing. It doesn't sound like de Blasio is setting up for some kind of major break despite all the campaigning.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's sort of, I mean, that never happens, right? I mean, look at the people that President Obama appointed, including his top rival Hillary Clinton for Secretary of State, clearly. So I do think that at the end of the day, the appointments tend to be less radical. And what I anticipate hearing from Bill de Blasio is, you know, they'll listen to me, I'll set the policy, and things will change. I mean, you do want to have running this incredibly large and complicated police department, which is not only going to be handling stop and frisk, but immediately the global war on terror. You don't want to really have somebody who has no experience in running the New York City Police Department. That would be a challenge to bring in a complete outsider. So there's the conundrum for Bill de Blasio.
And yet, at the same time, the fact that it's known that de Blasio would be considering the two top aides to Kelly makes me wonder whether there's more of an internal debate about stop and frisk within the NYPD than I may know about.
Yeah, that might be true. It might also be true that de Blasio is not necessarily as intent on reforming stop and frisk as he purports to be. I mean, there, you know, so much of the stop and frisk rhetoric was you know, him campaigning. But at the end of the day, he wants to retain the tactic and just use it more sparingly. Bratton was an innovator on stop and frisk. You know, he was one of the guys who, a big proponent of it. And both of these other two potential commissioners were in the department while it reached its, you know, its acme.
I mean, also, he, you know, Bill de Blasio has never taken the position that Comptroller John Liu took during the campaign, which was throw it out entirely.
Right.
And there was a point, I mean, Kathleen Horne did this fascinating look back at the stop and frisk under Bloomberg, and there was a point at which Bloomberg said, you remember this, mend it, don't end it. And people got very excited. And then he sort of dug in his heels in his Bloombergian way and sort of was basically, oh, actually, it's not mend it, don't end it, it's my way or the highway. So there is a point at which, obviously, even within the Bloomberg administration, there were discussions about can we reform the practice. I think that's probably what we're going to be looking for under Bill de Blasio is not, you know, having 600,000 mostly black and Latino young men stopped and frisked, but something that combines effective policing with respect for civil rights and also just, you know, the quality of life of black and Latino men in New York City.
WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, Dana Rubenstein from Capitol, New York. Listeners, anything you want to say or ask about the transition? Maybe you want to nominate somebody for any of the jobs in the administration? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Andrea, put on your other hat, your Transportation Nation hat. And Dana, I see your article today in Capital New York is about Mayor Bloomberg's taxi of tomorrow, currently being held up in court. A coalition of citizens groups has joined the case in favor of the taxi. And there's some other taxi news today. In fact, it looks like of all the things, housing, policing, charter schools, it looks like the first little policy area that de Blasio is going to get embroiled in has to do with taxi cabs.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, but it seems to be the case. Yeah, today at 11:30, the mayor and his taxi commissioner are holding a press conference in Williamsburg to announce that I guess there are 1,000 borough taxis on the street. Is that right?
Well, there are 1,000 on the street.
Borough taxis,
right,
the green,
right, the green
cabs.
Ones. Right, which are also, we should make note of, also in northern Manhattan, and they're all over northern Manhattan.
That's right. I live in northern Manhattan, and I'm seeing them all the time.
Much more than they are in some of the outer boroughs.
Right?
I mean, if you are on 116th Street, you can see them just cruising up and down all the time.
Yeah.
Not so much maybe in, say, Fifth Avenue and Park Slope.
Uh-huh. Which means that they're not necessarily doing what it was hoped they would do?
Well, I mean, they're supposed to serve Upper Manhattan and the boroughs, and a lot of the livery bases in Upper Manhattan were the ones that both championed the borough taxi bill and were the ones to, I think, sign up first for the borough taxis.
Yeah, it's interesting because when Mayor Bloomberg announced this, it was a state of the state, I think, 2 years ago, where he was sort of like, we're going to have taxis in the outer boroughs, and that was one of his big initiatives. And I was like, wow, that's a really strange big initiative. Where's the constituency for that? But now, my impression is that people like them. They like sort of seeing the green cabs coming down the street and having a sense of certainty. They don't have to negotiate a price. And Bill de Blasio is the one saying, well, maybe we need to revisit this. And I'm thinking, why? People like them. The drivers seem to like them, too. So this is going to be very, very interesting as it plays out.
And there are more borough taxis now than there are people who've signed up for Obamacare. No, I'm just kidding.
Almost.
But what's the other thing? The taxi of
tomorrow. Oh, the taxi of tomorrow. Right. That's Bloomberg's other big taxi initiative. And that was this idea that you would replace, ultimately replace, all of the yellow cabs on New York City streets with this one homogenous kind of boxy Nissan NV200 that would have all sorts of amenities for passengers and for drivers and also for people outside of the car, you know, for cyclists who might get doored by an opening taxi.
Right,
door.
I love your list of features. I don't think I've ever seen them listed as concisely in one place as in your article. And you called it a boxy Nissan, which is fair. But passenger-controlled air conditioning and heating, a panoramic glass roof, reading lights, charging ports for electronics,
right.
A front end designed not to hurt pedestrians.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how that works, but that's what they say. There's also ergonomics.
If they're not speeding, they won't hurt the pedestrians. And slide, or if they're going slower than the full speed limit, sliding doors so bicyclists riding by don't get doored.
And also ergonomic seats for drivers who apparently get a lot of back issues from sitting in the car all day.
But most would not be wheelchair accessible, which is one reason for the opposition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one big reason for the opposition. Also, some environmentalists take issue with the fact that you're taking so many existing hybrid taxis off the street. Something like 50% of the taxi fleet right now is hybrid, and these are combustion engine vehicles.
Why would environment-sensitive Mayor Bloomberg do that?
This is a mystery to me. The wheelchair-accessible thing, I can sort of see their point of view, although I do feel that because if you are a wheelchair-bound person in New York City, your transportation options are uniformly awful. I have never fully understood why they just sort of brush that off. I mean, every time that they talk about it, they tout this list of great features and that the passenger experience is going to be so much more wonderful. But of course, now, you know, a judge has said, well, you can't constitutionally require everybody to buy this particular model of cab. And that seems to me like an argument that just might stick.
And why would they? Why mandate one model of car rather than just require certain standards like the list we were going down and let companies manufacture to those standards and compete for the medallion owner's business?
Well, the argument is that the manufacturers weren't making those options available. And the only way to get that result is to sort of combine the market power of all of the fleet owners and sort of write one contract that you could then bid out to a manufacturer. So, you know, that was the argument. And they did get all of the features that they wanted, why they left out wheelchair accessibility and why they didn't require a hybrid engine is, again, somewhat of a mystery. But, you know, at the end of the day, they got a car that they're very proud of and which, you know, that's it. It's an embattled program. It's not clear if it'll go forward.
And just to close this loop, why would these independent groups who have now joined the court case on the side of the mayor, including the civic-minded Regional Plan Association and former MTA chief Elliot Sander, who's, you know, an environmental guy, why would they not be on the same side as the accessibility advocates and the environmentalists?
Well, one quick thing to point out about the hybrid issue is that retroactively the city has gone back and said, if you have a hybrid car, we won't require that you replace it with a non-hybrid taxi of tomorrow until such time
period.
As there is a hybrid taxi of tomorrow. Right. So that issue is now kind of mute. The disability access thing, you know, it's a contentious issue. I mean, the administration argues that they've created this dispatch system that enables people to call 311 or text 311 and have a wheelchair-accessible taxi come to their door. And they argue that's a superior, you know, benefit.
I can't say why those people would be in on the side that they're in. I mean, I do think that part of the motivation for this from Mayor Bloomberg is making New York a world-class city and the way other cities and international business see New York and their propensity to want to move here, large companies, because of this amenity. I do think that it all comes down to your conversation with Stephen Colbert last week, in which...
Really? I never thought that would come up.
Well, because the joke about the Lollipop Guild, the reason that they haven't had the lollipop ban is because of the Lollipop Guild.
The mayor, right? So for people who didn't see it, he asked why hasn't Mayor Bloomberg, with his large soda, sugary drinks limits, why hasn't he banned big lollipops yet? And Colbert answered his own question by saying, because of the strength of the Lollipop Guild,
right,
in lobbying the administration.
But I do think that is the essence of what Bill de Blasio is going to be facing, because there's a guild for everything in New York City, including, probably, if we look hard enough, lollipops. And I think that is part of this whole Taxi of Tomorrow dispute, is that every interest group has a guild in New York City, which is what makes it such a frustrating and fascinating place.
And he hasn't taken a position yet.
On lollipops.
On either lollipops or the Taxis of Tomorrow, per se?
He hasn't said whether he will continue the Bloomberg administration's appeal of the Taxi of Tomorrow ruling. And then on borough taxis, he's super wishy-washy. It's really not clear what he believes.
In fact, Amy, I saw it that you used taxis as an example in an article the other day of de Blasio hedging his bets during the campaign on many issues, even while becoming identified in the public's mind as a candidate with clear positions on preschool and tax hikes, on the wealthy, and stop and frisk. Another gray area is independent expenditures, Citizens United kind of spending, which the Supreme Court allowed to be unlimited and often anonymous, and which most Democrats, including de Blasio, object to as bad for democracy. But he allowed it in support of his campaign. You offer examples from real estate. You say on holding developers' feet to the fire, on affordable housing, for example. There are some ambiguities in his position. So there's a lot we don't know and a lot on which we can't just say, here's a liberal ideologue who has a set of set positions and we know how he's going to govern.
Right. I mean, and I suppose that's probably an issue with any mayor-elect, right? You campaign on a set number of issues and you try not to talk about all of the other issues that are a bit trickier to discuss. But yeah, there's a lot we still don't know about de Blasio that we're still learning.
I mean, a couple of things. I do want to say that one thing on the taxi thing is that de Blasio said he would get rid of David Yasky, the taxi commissioner, who he sort of elevated to the plane of Ray Kelly as the Bloomberg people he disliked so much that he was going to say months before he even won an election that he would get rid of him. So I think that that should be a pretty strong indication of where he will go with some of these Bloomberg initiatives. I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting because I remember, I mean, I covered the Bloomberg campaign, and we had no idea what he was going to do about anything. I mean, mostly what he said is, I'm going to be a great manager, and I'm going to manage the city out of its problems, which I think is a promise that in many ways he kept. But I think that we have in some ways a lot more clarity with Bill de Blasio at this point in his, you know, term, which hasn't even started, of sort of where he, what he thinks on some things. And also, I mean, one of the things I have really come to see with Bill de Blasio is he has incredible message discipline, more so than you might think from that sort of bearish kind of post-1980s activist demeanor. But yeah, he's a very, very disciplined person, and he will tell us what he wants when he wants to.
WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, Dana Rubenstein from Capital New York, as we talk about the transition, which de Blasio said to reporters yesterday begins in earnest today. Listeners, your thoughts, questions, nominations for any commissioners or deputy mayors or schools chancellor or anything, 212-433-WNYC. The nomination box is open, 212-433-9692. And oh, look, Stephanie on the Upper West Side has one. Hi, Stephanie. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I want to nominate, and I've already heard it talked about, so I hope it's true, Carmen Farina for schools chancellor.
Thank you. A very popular, I've heard this name before, met her once, I believe, a very popular school administrator. Do you know Carmen Farina?
I do not know her, and I do not have any intelligence on, I mean, I don't even have a short list, do you? I don't have a short list on schools commissioner. I mean, I know that there is one, I know it's been written about, but I don't know how real that is.
And is this something that he could go out of town for? Carmen Farina, I think, might have been... I'm embarrassed because I know that we've talked about her before. She might have been from District 15 in Brooklyn. I'm not sure, but has a good reputation in the educational establishment, to be sure. But I remember during the Dinkins and Giuliani era, and I guess even if you count Joel Klein under Bloomberg, mayors would go out of town for schools chancellors.
Kathy Black was essentially going out of town.
Going into outer space while staying in town. But, you know, Rudy Crewe was imported because he did well elsewhere.
Yeah, I think
Joe Fernandez under Dinkins years ago because he did well elsewhere.
Without a doubt. I think, you know, Dennis Walcott was only in because of Kathy Black to sort of heal that bomb. We sort of needed an educational insider. But I do think that education is typically where somebody comes from out of town. So I wouldn't necessarily expect it to be someone from within the system. I mean, I also think de Blasio has a kind of interesting needle to thread here because we know that he's, you know, his big program, obviously, Universal Pre-K, which he is supported by both the president and the governor in that goal. But the other thing that he's mentioned is reducing the amount of testing. And there's a whole lot more constraints having to do with both state funding and state standards and federal standards and the race to the top law. So it's interesting. What will be interesting to see is sort of how he's able to reduce that with all of the restrictions there are in federal law.
Bill in the Bronx calling about fire commissioner. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Brian. I was wondering if your guests might be able to shed any light on whether the fire department, whether the mayor-elect is going to keep Salvatore Cassano on at the fire department or if there might be a short list of candidates.
I have not heard any short list of candidates in fire department. I do know that the last fire commissioner was appointed on New Year's Eve when Bloomberg came in. So
not his first priority.
Well, not the first thing. I mean, you know, that was the post 9/11 fire department, which had just been decimated.
Right, of course.
But it was not a commissioner that was announced in the first round.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like one of the more politicized offices, although it might very well be for all we know.
Except for this issue with shutting down firehouses, which obviously Bill de Blasio, as a city council person, had a different view than all mayors have pretty much had, which is you've got to shut down some firehouses.
Larry in Bayside wants to call about the taxi wheelchair accessibility issue. Larry, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
You know, I've been writing about this issue since the 90s. I tried to contact the TLC, and I got to see the commissioner a couple of times, and I wrote some articles that were published in Newsday, trying to make a difference in terms of environmentalism. At the time that I started this, the only two cars that were available for cabs with the Crown Vic and the Chevy Caprice. And when you spoke to the drivers operating them in Manhattan, they got between 9 and 11 miles per gallon. Mm. So eventually the TLC started to be inhabited by people that actually started to care about the environment, especially Bloomberg. And they wanted to have a more efficient cab. And they ran into the taxi industry, who had adopted the Crown Vic as their favorite child because it was cheap, because Ford had a version of a police car that they were willing to sell very inexpensively. And nowadays, people don't operate the cabs they own. They rent them. The drivers pay for the fuel. So they don't care that they get 9 miles per gallon. What they care is that there's an entire subculture in New York City that repairs Crown Vics. You can blow up the transmission in a Crown Vic and have it back on the road in 2 hours because there's a whole subculture of mechanics and parts willing to fix them. Bloomberg mandated hybrids in order to get better mileage, and he ran into a very legal, thorny issue, which is that the EPA determines mileage for cars. The city doesn't have that right. Only California can do that because the California Air Resources Board predates the EPA.
That's a really interesting list of both interests that different groups have and kind of bureaucratic intersections of priorities.
And
see a way out?
If you want a cab that handles a wheelchair, you have to have a big, heavy vehicle. They have those vehicles on the street now, but only a few hundred of them. They're minivans, the Honda Odyssey and the Toyota Sienna.
Right.
And you're going to have different vehicles for different jobs. There is no one cab that will take wheelchairs and get good mileage and not make a lot of pollution and not break down. And I was advocating that we let the marketplace decide what's the best car. So I kept trying to get them to accept the Honda Accord at the time when they refused to accept anything but the Crown Vic, because the Honda Accord was the only four-cylinder full-size car available.
And I got to run, Larry, but is it the fact that the medallion owners have had their hooks into the various administrations, and they've given de Blasio a lot of money, and he seems to be very responsive to medallion owners. Is that why it doesn't go in other directions?
Because of the nature of the competing interests and the fact that the taxi industry is entrenched in having the product that they want.
Right.
And you can't just say to them, well, you've been buying $20,000 cars, now you have to buy $50,000 cars. And also, if you have only one vehicle that has no competition, the manufacturer never changes it or fixes any of the problems. Have you ridden in an NV200? Is it a comfortable, safe experience for you? It's just a transit van that Nissan happened to have around. None of the major car companies are interested in being New York City's taxi. Right. It's 13,000 cars that get renewed every 3 years. It's a drop in the bucket. Right. Toyota specifically requested that they not use their cars for cabs.
Interesting. I'm going to leave it there, Larry, but very, very interesting. On schools, Chancellor, Gotham Schools published a list of likely candidates. Shale Polakow-Saransky, who's the number two right now, he's the chief content officer, right, educational officer. Carmen Farina is on that list. Andres Alonso, who's in the school system, I believe. Josh Starr, I don't know, and Bob Hughes. And about Farina, since the name came up and we couldn't say much about her, they write that as Alonso's predecessor as instructional chief at the Department of Education, Farina was considered one of the city's most experienced educators to work for Joel Klein. With a career that spanned four decades, she was first an award-winning teacher. Later, she served as principal of PS6 in Manhattan. 3 years later, Farina was picked by Mayor Bloomberg to head one of the city's 10 regional districts that formed out his first reorganization. A year later, Klein promoted her to be his number two. She retired after 2 years and later criticized the city's use of report cards to hold schools and principals accountable.
I think that
so
sounds
an insider
like
outsider.
The kind of resume that Bill de Blasio would resonate to, this idea of having come through ground level, grassroots, been a teacher, been a principal. I mean, I think the feeling with both Klein and all of his successors, but especially with Klein, was that, you know, oh, where these are sort of these young or, you know, sort of hotshot Harvard guys running the school system that sort of thought that they were too smart by half over the educators. Now, it doesn't mean that people who come up through an entrenched bureaucracy necessarily have all the answers, but that does fit in with Bill de Blasio's philosophy of his rejecting imposed from the top ideas.
Correct. Before we run out of time, and we're going to talk next about whether conservative bias contributed to 60 Minutes errors on the Benghazi story. That's our next topic. But just one more name I want to throw out there, Dana, and I guess it remains to be seen exactly what position de Blasio's wife, Shirlane McCray, will play in the administration.
Right.
In the announcement last week of the transition team leaders, de Blasio made a point of saying that he and Shirlane chose them together and she's his number one advisor. So obviously this will be a different relationship, professionally speaking, than, say, Governor Cuomo and Sandra Lee, maybe more like Bill and Hillary Clinton. In fact, didn't Cuomo say to a who did he say to somebody in Albany that he could flirt with her because he's single?
Oh, I don't remember the assemblywoman's name. It was during his big casino.
Just the other week.
Right.
Well, single, yeah, but aren't they a household for years?
Yeah, right.
But anyway, she obviously plays no political role. You know, maybe more like Bill and Hillary Clinton. Is de Blasio considering an official paid role for Shirlane McCray? It remains to be seen whether she becomes a popular first lady or controversial in any way. We have no idea. I gather they met when they were both working in the Dinkins administration. She mm-hmm. was a speechwriter, so she's obviously got policy interests, some policy chops. Do you know what the options are?
No, except that, I mean, I do. I'm a little surprised that his statements about this aren't just a little bit more controversial in that the electorate didn't elect Shirlane. So, I mean, if he were to give her some sort of formal role.
Well, they didn't elect any commissioner or deputy mayor, right?
Correct. But you know, when you go to your lawyer, you're not going to your lawyer's wife, right? Like, there's a distinction to be made.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, she, you know, her role as advisor-in-chief was clear,
right,
I think, to most of the electorate. In fact, there's probably a distinct portion of New York that voted for Bill de Blasio because of his family, if not You know, I mean, certainly sure. quite a few voters that we met and spoke with over the course of the campaign said exactly that. I do think that there is some conflict of interest rules governing appointing family members, but I am not sure what they are. So I will have to look that up, which I will do right after I get off air.
WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, to it. And Dana Rubenstein from Capital New York. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC up next. Did 60 Minutes blow it on Benghazi because of conservative bias? We will hear an argument that they did. Stay with us.